A U.S. penalty paves the way for the biggest privatization in British banking, and we'll talk Tabasco as the family-run Louisiana business celebrates 150 years. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. We start with the news that the Royal Bank of Scotland, or RBS, will pay a $4.9 billion penalty in the U.S. for its role in the financial crisis a decade ago. Peter Hahn, professor at the London Institute of Banking and Finance, has been telling me how this all started.
RBS operated through its acquisition of NatWest, a major mortgage bond producer in America. NatWest had this business that underwrote mortgages and packaged them into securities and distributed them to investors. The whole process of which mortgages went into which securities was seen as a high-risk product, and the U.S. government took action against banks that were involved in the mortgage-backed securities business long after the fact.
As a result of all this, RBS actually had to be bailed out to the tune of some $60 billion. This settlement, far from grim news, could actually be positive for RBS and for the British government?
Absolutely. This settlement puts most of the ugliness of the past now behind RBS. It should make it easier to privatize RBS. It's been up to 83% owned by the UK government, so more or less a nationalized bank.
It would be the biggest privatization in UK history, but do you think the public will ever get that money back?
RBS was rescued to keep the UK economy going. The cash machines probably wouldn't have worked in a few more days if RBS had continued as it was. So the government stepped in, saved RBS. The government needs to get as much money out of it as it can.
Peter Hahn, let's do the numbers. RBS shares are up nearly 5% after its announcement. Global oil is still at 2014 highs. Traders are watching what fresh U.S. sanctions against Iran might mean. Iran produces about 4% of the world's supply. It's Super Thursday for the Bank of England. A rate rise today was a near certainty just a few weeks ago, but now central bank watchers say that's almost certainly not going to happen. The BBC's Victoria Craig explains.
Inflation has weakened, business activity has cooled, and Britain's economy grew much less expected in the first 3 months of the year. While many blamed poor weather and a snowstorm dubbed Beast of the East, there's more to it than just seasonal factors. Here's JP Morgan Asset Management's Karen Ward.
The downturn that we've seen in consumer credit, in the housing market on the very latest numbers, that just adds to the idea there's something a little bit more deep-rooted going on.
Continued uncertainty about Brexit is a dark cloud that's still lingering over the bank.
If you look at the unemployment rate, it's extremely low and there are signs that wage growth is picking up. So that suggests the economy, if you like, is operating at its potential, underlying inflation is starting to edge up, and that would suggest they should be starting to normalise policy. But the Brexit negotiation, I think, just will probably keep them hesitant in the near term.
But after Governor Mark Carney strongly hinted a rate rise would come at this meeting, holding off could pose the same credibility problem the Federal Reserve faced last year. Ms. Ward said the BOE is likely now just weighing the risks of waiting.
They're trying to provide these markets with very clear guidance. At the same time, there's a lot happening in the global economy. There's, you know, trade wars, there's geopolitical events arising, which is sort of throwing them off. That's the difficulty they face right now, is trying to be predictable in a very unpredictable world.
In the end, the bank will balance all of the external risks against progress toward their targets for labor market growth and higher inflation. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
Now, here's a story my dad and millions of others around the world who keep a little bottle of fiery red sauce to spice things up will love. Tabasco, still made by the McElhenney Company on Avery Island, Louisiana, turns 150 this year. I've been speaking to its CEO, Tony Simmons.
Avery Island is actually a giant mountain of salt under the ground. The climate is very well suited to growing peppers, especially Tabasco peppers, because pepper plants do not like to have any water on their roots. And the slope on Avery Island allows us to plant peppers, and that's probably one of the reasons we were successful.
And the peppers are really the key ingredient, and there are only three ingredients in the original sauce. Tell us a little bit about how it's made.
Most sauces you see are normally made with cayenne, and a cayenne pepper is a much milder pepper. When we make Tabasco, we grow our peppers, we grind it into a mash. As we put that mash into oak barrels to age for up to 3 years. We add a little bit of salt to it. At the end of the 3 years, when we're ready to actually make the product, we mix a certain amount of our mash with vinegar, and then we strain most of the solids off of it. There really is no further processing at all.
Clearly, it's a recipe for success. I mean, you're in more countries than McDonald's, 195 countries, I think. So what are some of the more exotic places that you'll find Tabasco sauce?
Well, we hope you'll find Tabasco sauce just about anywhere you go in the world, because our goal is to help defend the world against bland food.
That's a very noble goal.
We work hard to try to help humanity with it.
Now, why do you think no one in the family has been tempted to sell the business to a bigger company?
I think one of the reasons is probably Avery Island itself. The island is sort of the rock for our family. At the same time, my family enjoys owning a family business, and I have about 130 family members who are the shareholders who own our company. They allow me to run it for them, but they own it.
Tony Simmons, spicing up your Thursday. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.